Whereas offences against property have of late increased in and near the metropolis, and the local establishments of nightly watch and nightly police having been found inadequate to the prevention and detection of crime, and whereas it is expedient to substitute a new and more efficient system of police in lieu of such...
Peeler by Patrick Carroll. Episode 6.
Oh, Mr. Peel, what have you done? Your police act so grand, sir. It will be the cause, I have no doubt, of filling Van Diemen's land, sir. London now, believe me, sir, is overstruck with queer goes, who wish the police act and you were sent to Jimmy Square's.
Snow Girl, Mrs. Gregory has said that you begged to see me.
I do, Father.
Upon what subject? Not that there can be but one subject between us at present.
Indeed, I am aware of it, Father. And I wish to tell you, at last, that I have been so blessed as to see now how grievously I have offended against you.
That would be a blessing indeed, if it were true.
I pledge that it is, Father. I have been given to realize that my demeanor towards you has been most... abominable and hateful.
So it has.
And that realization has made me a thousand times more wretched than ever my fancied grievances did.
And what will you do in this enlightened state?
I will most humbly petition for my father's forgiveness and for God's.
And then?
I shall strive never to be so wicked as to oppose you in any way, in the hope that you may someday again come to love and regard me as your most dutiful and obedient daughter.
And Martin Quinn in his just prison, what of him?
I promise I shall never willingly see him for as long as I live.
Swear it. On your knees.
I swear it, Father. I swear it upon my mother's memory.
Get up, Mariah. You may come down and take your place at my table.
Thank you, Father.
You remain on probation, mind.
You will see that I am truly sincere in my present feelings.
It will be best for you that you are, if you are not. Come. Let us go down.
Yes, Father.
Ah, Mr. Morley, sir. Good evening.
Good evening to you, Mr. Evans. I hope I see you well.
Never better, sir. We do not have the honour of your presence so often as we could wish. We must make the best of it.
Very hospitable, Mr. Evans. Very. Well, a good attendance this evening.
Why, so it is, Mr. Morley. We generally do well when our friend Mr. Butler takes the chair.
Mr. Evans, as our host, be acquainted with Mr. Button, sir, and Mr. Quinn.
I have, of course, had the pleasure of seeing both of the gentlemen before, wearing, naturally, the uniforms which designate them in their professional capacities. It is an honour, therefore, to welcome you in your private character.
Oh, a pleasure, Mr. Evans, you may be sure.
Indeed, Mr. Evans. We're enjoying a dispensation from uniforms and duties tonight in most agreeable circumstances. Happy, I'm sure, to bring our modest celebration to your excellent health.
If you will walk this way, gentlemen, I have a table prepared for your private use. Rob, look smart now. See to these gentlemen as your particular charge.
Mr. Evans.
Well, Mr. Dutton, your health, sir. I am aware that of all of Mr. Quinn's colleagues, none has been more faithful in his support and sympathy during the dark days just ended. Yes.
Allow me to return thanks, Mr. Morley, and to assure you that I have only acted out of the united feeling of our entire division.
I am sure that knowledge has been a great consolation to Mr. Quinn in his ordeal.
You're right, Mr. Morley. Bad times show good friends.
Yes.
There's justice in that. I cannot deny that in the past, Mr. Quinn and I have had those conflicts as will arise between the commanding and the commanded, and some other differences as well.
The novels in the coattail, and reformed views, yes, Mr. Cotton?
Just so. Indeed. Mr. Quinn has had ways and ideas I've thought unseemly in a police constable. Not in keeping, was my opinion. But we can't all be constituted the same way, and I've never had a lasting word to say against Martin Quinn. As a man... or as a constable. No, nor as anyone else, as I'm aware of, and
group.
I don't scruple to say so.
Mr. Dutton, you're too kind.
Hush, Mr. Quinn, hush. The sergeant,
I call him so merely to give his words the weight of his rank. There's nothing of you not attested by the commissioners themselves.
You do get on exceedingly well with Colonel Rowan and Mr. Main, considering the short span of your acquaintance.
Why, I must own that we have found ourselves of one mind in things in general in our few meetings. Remarkable gentlemen both. Colonel Rowan in particular.
Well, come the truth, Mr. Morley, how did you do it?
Do it? I fail to understand you, Mr. Quinn. Do what?
Secure me release. Now, I don't know much, Mr. Morley, but I'm sure it was you that managed the business.
Why? How could Mr. Morley...
Look, sir, little more. I did exercise a little discreet manipulation, but in truth, I found myself sitting in Fortune's lap and was able to bring certain parties around to my way of thinking without too much difficulty.
But which parties and how?
Oh, in time, Mr. Quinn, in time.
In any case, I am sure you have benefited me more than I...
Mr. Quinn, what is it?
I must ask you to excuse me for a moment, gentlemen.
The individual who takes his seat by the fire, is he who I imagine?
Mr. John Staples.
Ah, indeed.
Good evening, Mr. Staples.
What in damnation are you doing out of... Well, Prentice, what do you want of me now you're here?
I thought, first I might have the pleasure of refilling your glass, Master Staples.
Send up a dram, then. My guts seem to want it tonight. And I ain't particular who I get a drink off, so long as I get it.
You shall. I've told the boy to bring your usual directly. Mr. Staples.
No.
But you'll know where I've been these past months.
I've heard.
From Mariah, from Miss Staples.
And others.
A man finds a dealer time to think in such a place.
Does he, then? I wouldn't know. Never having been in quad myself.
Being there rather cleans out the mind, if you understand me. You seem to get closer to putting things in their proper order.
What things might they be?
Why, for one, I find it ain't important to me to quarrel with you anymore, Master Staples.
You don't, eh? You don't find it important?
No.
Did you think of giving me your apology, then? Did you think to make amends for the liberties you took and the usage you've given me? Is that your proper order of things?
No, I don't find I have any apology to make to you. I regret that our differences came to the point they did, but they did. And the one thing I wish to do is to put it right from me mind, to leave it lie down, start a fresh slate.
Is that what you want? Well, it won't do for me. I ain't a forgetting sort of man, nor yet a forgiving one.
No, I can't say as I ever supposed you were, but...
Come, there's something behind this. You want something of me. I can see it.
Only to mend our differences, or at least... Mr. Staples, a few days ago I received a letter from your daughter.
Did you? She's a great one for correspondence, is Mariah. Though I think she'll be having less of it in future.
As I don't need to remind you, sir, your daughter and I have desired for several years past to be married. In the letter I speak of, Miss Staples does me the honour of asserting her determination that we shall be so united, regardless of any opposition.
Does she indeed?
Yes. Now, it would be much more agreeable to us both, I'm sure, if you should approve or at least not oppose our union. Now, that is why I have spoken to you as I have tonight. But approval or no, we shall be married.
You won't.
How are we to be prevented, huh? Not by coercion, physical or... No. Not by coercion, I promise you. I will not suffer any
man. Coercion be damned. You shall not be separated from my daughter by any force, but by her own choice and inclination.
Her choice? But I know her inclination is all in favour of... But I know it.
Do you? Well, I know better. So you wish to mend your quarrel with me tonight?
I did.
Well, you failed. You are still my enemy and shall remain so till one or both of us is dead. But I did mend another quarrel today.
Another?
Aye, with my daughter. She pleaded that I might see her in her room this morning, and she humbly begged for my forgiveness. Begged upon her knees.
She
on her knees. With hot tears of shame streaming down her face. Almost affecting it was. And then she followed me downstairs and presided at my table, as is her place, the very picture of a meek and dutiful daughter.
I don't believe it. That's a lie.
Is it? Why, you may come to my house and ask her if it is. Only that she don't want to see you ever again on any pretext whatsoever.
She will have to tell me so herself.
Then you come and ask her. but ask her from the street. For if you ever set a foot over my doorstep, I'll put a ball between your eyes.
You threatened to shoot a police officer?
Oh, don't come that gammon. There's no policeman between the two of us.
Prime your pistol, then, for I shall be at your doorstep at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. I wish you good night.
Good night, Frenchies. Thank you for my liquor.
Your interview with Mr. Staples appears to have been quite animated, Mr. Quinn. Particularly in its later stages.
Despicable man he is, I could willingly see him dead.
What's he been saying to you?
He tries to impose the most monstrous and transparent lies upon me. I cannot allow him to affect me so.
Oh, by all means, calm yourself, my friend. I assume from your demeanour that you approached him with a view to reconciliation. I take it he did not receive you in like spirit.
No, he did not. He swore he'd be my enemy to the grave, and then he had the rank audacity to try and make me believe that Maria had changed her heart and now wants nothing further to do with me.
Well, could such a thing not be possible?
How can I believe it when I carry a letter in my pocket pledging her affection and faithfulness for eternity?
Oh, it's clear, surely, that your former master merely wishes to torment you.
Yes, he must not become so inflamed if you know him to be lying.
And surely, again, the thing is easily put to the test.
It is, and I've told him I shall be at his door tomorrow morning. And if, as I suspect, all he has told me tonight is a lie, Maria shall come away with me and we shall be married at once.
I should think Inspector Beale may have a word to say about that.
If I marry in defiance of my bride's father, I shan't be too anxious as to anyone else's opinion.
Now, gentlemen, has everything been to your satisfaction?
Oh, entirely, Mr. Evans. The saddle was most excellent.
Ah, the very best Welsh mutton, you see.
Oh, really? Not much left, as you may see.
No.
A fine joint, eh, Mr. Quinn?
Oh, yeah, very, yes. These gentlemen are aware, Mr. Evans, that I have been rather on Lenten rations of late. It's put me in a proper heart to give ample justice to your hospitality. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. You have done so and more. Now, Mr. Morley, if I might take the liberty of offering a final suggestion, I have in my cellar one last bottle of the Nort 8 port.
Oh, really?
As you and your friends are marking a special occasion, perhaps?
Why, the very thing, Mr. Evans. Up with it, if you please.
Directly, Mr. Morley. Oh, and Mr. Butler presents his compliments, desires to know if you will favour the company with a song.
Oh, why, Mr. Evans, return my compliments to Mr. Butler and inform him that with a glass or two of the Nort 8 inside of me, I'll undertake to sing any song he cares to name.
Very well, sir.
Come on, Mr.
Come, Mr. Dutton.
Is your head quite clear yet?
Quite clear enough. Thank you, Mr. Morley. Are we leaving?
Oh, yes, Mr. Dutton. Our host will want to be in bed before daylight.
Oh, you're right, it's gone midnight, eh? We don't wish to overstay.
Mr. Evans, sir.
What is it, Rob?
Mr. Staples, sir.
Drunk, as usual. I declare I don't know why I allow him to use this house. Come, Mr. Staples. You must stir yourself, sir. You can't sleep. What?
Mr. Evans, sir, what's wrong with him?
Mr. Morley. Mr. Morley, step over for a moment.
Certainly, Mr. Evans.
There's not a doubt of it. Dead as Mr. Pitt. But how? Why, not an hour ago he was
Look
talking
to yourself, gentlemen.
An hour ago, I almost wished him dead.
Yes, you did, Mr. Quinn. Yeah. Sergeant Dutton, does Mr. Tuke, the surgeon, still act as coroner for this district?
Yes, sir, he does.
Be so good as to step round and alert him. It will not be a good policy to move Mr. Staples until an expert... another expert has seen him.
Yeah, Mr. Morley, you don't suggest that anything unnatural has happened to
him. I don't suggest it, Constable Quinn. I'm convinced of it. What is your opinion, Mr. Tuke?
There can be but one opinion, Mr. Morley. Poison. Mm. From the disposition of the corpse, I should guess antimony. Mm. That, of course, must remain a supposition until an autopsy can be performed.
Just so. Although I'm quite convinced that you are correct, sir.
You are very soon upon the scene of this tragedy, Mr.
I may take no professional credit for that, Mr. Tuke. I chanced to be here in a purely private capacity this evening.
Fortunate coincidence.
Yes, I took supper here with my friends, Constable Quinn and Sergeant Dutton.
Are these men police officers?
Yes, sir. You are, I believe, acquainted with my superior, Inspector Beale.
And we, well, at least I was well acquainted with the late Mr. Staples.
Were you?
Perhaps you will then be able to hazard a guess as to why the unfortunate man should have taken poison.
Oh, no, no, I could not. In truth, Mr. Tuke, the notion of John Staples making away with himself is completely outside his character, as I knew it.
In that case, you will perhaps need to look further afield, eh, Mr. Morley?
Could he have taken such poison accidentally, Mr. Tuke?
What was Mr. Staples' trade?
He was a master cooper.
Had he been a tanner or a cloth dyer, there would have been a remote contingency, but a cooper? No, impossible.
Such a dose as would kill a man must have been taken or administered deliberately. Mm. But where and by whom?
Well, it can't have been here, sir. I served Mr. Staples' spirits myself all the evening.
You did?
Why, yes, I did, but I
didn't compose mean... yourself, Rob. Now, tell me, did Mr. Staples partake of any company this evening?
No, sir. He hasn't been much in company at all of late. He hasn't been over popular with the other gentlemen for some time past.
I saw him in conversation with only one other tonight, and that was your friend, Mr. I should say, Constable Quinn.
Oh, yes, that's true enough. And you know, Mr. Morley, that our conversation was not a friendly one. Well, I can't pretend that it was.
Yes, well, no doubt all these points will emerge at the coroner's inquest. I'm sure there will be an inquest, will there not, Mr. Morley?
No doubt of it at all, Mr. Tuke.
Of course, Martin. How could I refuse to accompany you on such an errand, dreadful as it is?
Thank you, Mr. Lytton. I honestly cannot predict what Miss Staples' reaction will be, but I feel the need of support from another of her friends, and your office may also be...
Just needed. So. I understand entirely. Do you propose to call now at this unseasonable hour, or to wait until morning?
I strongly suggest that we wait upon Miss Staples without delay, sir.
Will it make a great difference to her, do you think?
I cannot speak as to that, Mr. Quinn, but it may make a great deal of difference to others.
To others? Well, by all means, let us go, then.
Yeah, I shall be with you directly. I am properly attired.
There is someone at home, surely.
There must. Where would the household be at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Decamped, perhaps.
Decamped? To what purpose, Mr. Morley?
What, indeed? Such an idea is absurd.
Oh, no doubt you're right. Try the door again, Mr. Quinn.
Oh, Mrs. Gregory, where are you? The poor woman must be getting deaf at the post.
There's the light.
Mrs. Gregory! Mariah, it is Martin Quinn at the door. I must come in.
Mr. Quinn, what are you doing here, and at such an hour?
Do not distress yourself, Mrs. Gregory. Is Mariah at home? Well, I have news for her.
What is it? What's happened?
Your master has not come home tonight, I believe, Mrs. Gregory.
Well, I did not hear him, surely, sir, but I sleep away at the top of the house.
I fear he will not be coming home again, ma'am.
Dead, Mrs. Gregory, at the Saracen's Head, not 3 hours ago.
Oh, but how?
Well, we think...
That's not entirely clear, ma'am. He was taken at first to be in a drunken stupor at the end of the evening. Closer examination, however, revealed him to have expired.
Oh, what a dreadful thing. Not, may God forgive me, that I shall mourn him for very long.
I'm sure he will forgive you if you pray for his mercy.
Mrs. Gregory, is Miss Staples at home?
Well, she is at home, but she's been retired to her bedroom these 4 hours.
Ma'am, I must request you take us to Miss Staples' room directly.
Oh, yes, sir. She must be sleeping very soundly. Really, I don't like to wake her.
Miss Staples! Miss Staples, I'm coming in! Oh, asleep after all. And I was sure she'd be far away by this.
And so she is.
What? Oh, she cannot be.
Oh, you and I have looked often enough upon the faces of the dead to know.
No, it cannot be. Your hand... Give me a hand.
Well, there's not a tremor. Not a breath. There's nothing.
May God forgive her. May we all forgive and be forgiven.
Be still of God. She will have such peace and mercy as her in creation, and God will look on helpless world without end.
Martin, such words at such a moment.
See to Mrs. Gregory, Mr. Lytton. There is no need for you here.
Your name is... written on this letter by the bed.
Oh, give it to me, and be so good as to go downstairs, Mr. Morley. Yeah. I shall touch nothing but the letter,
of course. But Martin, surely...
Leave me!
Oh.
My eternally dearest Martin.
all prison walls must crumble in time. All jailers must eventually pass away. In these last few moments before the final liberation, my mind, for so long clouded and numbed, has cleared and wakened. I see now that my chosen means of escape is not only the best and truest path for myself, but also renders the kindest justice to others. That he who has been my prison master should find his release from a life that must have become miserable to him through my hand is, at last, the most filial offering I could have made him. But it is to you, my darling Martin, that I offer the great boon of my disappearance from among the gloomy lights of this world. Can one so unfitted as I know myself to be for both felicity and misery hope to make another happy in this world? I fear it could not be so. I must look forward to another sphere in which we may yet be together, and where I may have become worthier of my beloved. Until that time, I remain, believe me, truly to be your own most loving and now serene Maria.
Gentlemen, if you please. Foreman, has the jury reached its verdicts?
We have, sir.
May we hear them, if you please?
Yes, sir. We, the jury, called by the coroner of this district to inquire into the deaths of John George Staples, Master Cooper of Northampton Square, Clerkenwell, and of Maria Caroline Staples, spinster of the same address, after considering the evidence placed before us, find that John Staples met his death as the direct result of a large dose of the poison antimony administered by his daughter, Maria Staples, while the balance of her mind was disturbed, and thus return a verdict upon him of unlawful killing. We find that Maria Staples died from the identical cause, having taken the poison of antimony in a dose large enough to have killed her, and we thus return a verdict of self-destruction.
Thank you, gentlemen. Your verdict will be recorded and passed to the appropriate authority. You're excused with the coroner's thanks, which we also extend to Mr. Evans, landlord of the Saracen's Head Tavern, for the use of his premises during this inquest. The inquest is hereby adjourned.
And that is the end of the chapter.
Oh, I suppose it is, Mr. Morley. Yes. As I came here today, I passed through Northampton Square. Somehow my feet would not go another way.
It is no more than should be expected, my friend.
I noted, by the way, as I passed, that your friend Mr. Reed's printing shop is dark and shuttered.
Yes. I fear I have been the cause of his having lost the patronage of the excellent Mrs. Gascoigne.
Ah.
In point of fact, I believe both Screever and Davy Kern's offence are retired from the metropolis for the present.
Oh, don't be delicate, Mr. Morley. You've warned them away, I'm sure.
It was hinted that Birmingham, for instance, might prove greener pastures just at present. I observe that you are once more in uniform, Constable.
Yes, I resumed it only today.
And how do you find yourself in it, after all that's passed?
Oh, much the same. The streets and the people in them have not altered greatly on account of my absence.
Oh, there have been alterations, depend upon it, Constable. And it's your duty, as it is mine, to observe and be aware of them.
And thus be better able to sweep away the drunkards and harlots and keep the rabble at bay, yeah?
Well, I must own that since I've ventured that description of your duties, my opinion of the new police has altered somewhat for the better.
Well, I'm happy to hear you say so, Mr. Morley.
Which is not to say that the humble abilities of some of the old police can be entirely dispensed with. Not all deaths, for instance, will be so easily explained as those of the tragic Miss Staples and her father.
Well, that is certainly true. You will know that there was a moment when I felt sure that John Staples' death would be laid upon my head.
Most unlikely, from a detective point of view. No court could have sustained such an idea.
But yet must I remind you that courts have been mistaken before and will be again?
The more the need then for the new police to have become able detectives. I have said so to Colonel Rowan and Mr. Main.
Well, no doubt you are right, but I shall be content for the present to manage as best I can with the drunkards and harlots, who will surely be with us yet a while.
Ah, your words remind me. with no disrespect to the young lady in question, of the small commission you asked me of a few days ago, the matter of your former fellow prisoner?
Ah, yes.
Yeah, a simple business. The young woman's debts did not amount to as much as £12, and they've been discharged, and she was released yesterday. Although released to what future, I do not ask.
Oh, nor do I, Mr. Morley. I only say that my experience of the girl's character does not lead me to despair on her account. The debts were paid anonymously, of course.
Yes, as you directed.
And as were my own.
Mr. Morley, will you not now tell me exactly how you secured my release?
Nope. I do not feel myself at liberty to say. I suggest that you might ask the commissioners.
Well, I shall certainly have an opportunity to do so. I am appointed to call at Whitehall Place in 2 days' time.
You must make sure to remember, when you see them, that Mr. Morley of Bow Street most earnestly desired his compliments.
I shall indeed, Mr. Morley.
Good day, Constable Quinn. I trust we see you well.
Quite well, thank you, sir.
And we further trust you find yourself happily restored to your friends and colleagues.
Or as happily as can be expected so soon after the recent tragedy, of which, I assure you, Mr. Mayne and myself were most distressed to hear.
Indeed. Our condolences, Constable.
Thank you again, gentlemen.
If I do not intrude, Constable, you had, I believe, known the young lady and her father for some little time.
12 years, sir.
12 years.
If it's not inconvenient, may I request permission to ask the commissioners a question?
Of course, Quinn.
I should say that I spoke with Mr. Morley the other day. He begs me, I must add, to present his best compliments to you both, gentlemen.
Very kind, I'm sure.
Now, sir, I know that somehow he was instrumental in my being released out of prison, but he refuses to say exactly how he managed it. He did say, however, that I might inquire it of the commissioners.
Blackmail, Quinn, that's how he managed it. Bald, benevolent blackmail.
Blackmail? I don't understand, sir.
And Mr. Morley learned, by means of his own individual methods, that Lord Troll, in concert with Mrs. Gascoigne and a man he calls Peter the Screever, were engaged in some pretty precious villainy in relation to a certain widowed lady. Mr. Morley brought their activities home to them, and, under threat of public disclosure, forced Lord Troll to admit that he and his servants had perjured themselves against you.
And with that admission in his hands, the ingenious gentleman from Bow Street induced two interested parties, whom we must forbear to name, to mitigate your debts and expunge the verdict against you. It was all done with the nicest tact and sagacity.
Oh, I see. Well, at least I... Well, thank you, gentlemen. I'm happy to know that my feelings of gratitude toward Mr. Morley have a sound basis.
You may be assured of that. But now, to our present business. Martin Quinn, my duty constrains me to observe that you are no longer to be permitted to wear your present uniform.
Why not, sir?
Because it is no longer proper for you to do so.
But I must beg the commissioners to inform me in what way I have disqualified myself from wearing my uniform.
You are disqualified by virtue of the fact that following the most earnest recommendations of your superiors, and at the express order of the Secretary of State for the Home Department, you are hereby stripped of the office of Metropolitan Police Constable and are promoted to the rank of Sergeant.
Sergeant?
My congratulations, Sergeant Quinn.
Sergeant Quinn, you carry, as I do myself, a wound suffered in the final battle against Bonaparte.
Yes, sir.
Despite that wound, you would, had it been necessary, have continued in your duty.
Why, I hope I would, sir.
Yeah. You have, in a sense, been more grievously wounded in your present service than ever you were by the French. Are you full-heartedly willing, despite that, to continue your service to your fellow countrymen?
I hope I am, Colonel. I feel I am.
Excellent. You're excused, Sergeant. Carry on with your duties.
Yes, Colonel Ryan.
That was episode 6 of Peeler by Patrick Carroll, with Mick Ford as Martin Quinn and James Booth as Jeremiah Morley. Peter Jeffrey was Colonel Rowan, Killian McKenna, Richard Main. Joanna Myers played Mariah Staples and Ian Lindsay, John Staples. Ronald Herbman was Sergeant Dutton, Richard Pierce, Mr. Yardley, and Timothy Carton, Reverend Lytton. Other parts were played by Alan Barker, Mark Straker, and Elizabeth Kelly. The singer was Martin Carthy. Peeler was directed by Janet Whittaker. You Toms and Jerrys now lament, the Charlies now will queer you. For Mr. Field, you watchman, will be far too strong to fear you.